welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's a great pleasure to have you company today. And for the second hour of today's show, I have a real treat lined up for you. I have, for the full hour, Richard Gage, AIA, architect and member of the American Institute of Architects and founding member of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, on the line. And I have to say, Richard, firstly, welcome to the show, Richard Gage.
Thank you so much, Fenton. Mr. Fenton, it's great to be here with you. It's an honor, in fact.
Indeed. And I have to say, Richard, you know, you're a great hero to me and many people who have been struggling with the knowledge that things are not right. Things are not right on so many levels in our modern Western democracies around the world. And you have stepped up as a professional with credibility and with adherence to very, very rigorous principles to challenge a very, very difficult situation, because we are still in the midst of the aftermath of 9/11. I believe even, you know, 12, 13 years later, the world was reshaped by that event. And we are living through an evolving situation, which is not improving. Things are not getting better. We've had changes of government. The United States has had a change of government, and things have rolled on exactly as they were. Australia has had a couple of changes of government. And yet we see the apparent empire being consolidated, and this attempt to strengthen US power through the use of the very frightening specter of terrorism as a reason why US imperial power is necessary for the protection of people. And when I say imperial power, I don't just mean the use of military force. I also mean the entire range of invasive surveillance, which, of course, has become a massive issue with the revelations of Edward Snowden, as being part of this apparently necessary protection that that we require in order to protect our so-called freedoms. So I just have to say, you have done tremendous work in countering the basic presumptions and the basic myths that underlie this overall trend that we see in the United States and many other countries around the world. Would you like just briefly address that broader concept?
We have to know what happened exactly on 9/11, because, as you suggested, all of these changes in our society, and many societies, I mean, the UK, Canada, Australia, all around the world, in addition to the U.S., we are dealing with the aftermath of $4.5 trillion global war on terror as a result of what happened on 9/11. We're dealing with the loss of our liberties with the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, which removed freedoms that predate the revolution in our country. So we've lost 6,000 U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq. We've killed well over a million in those countries. And all of this goes back to 9/11. So I represent 2,100 architects and engineers that are demanding a real investigation of what actually happened on 9/11. And when we look at the evidence, as we will today, what we find is that it's not what we were told. We were lied to. There's evidence of explosive controlled demolition in all three of the high-rises on 9/11. And we're exposing that all around the world in 350 presentations that I've personally given, including three in Australia, Brisbane,
indeed,
Sydney, and what was the third one?
I think you might have been over to New Zealand as well, but I think possibly Melbourne or Perth.
Yeah. Melbourne, yeah.
Yes.
And New Zealand, certainly. The architects and engineers that I represent want a real investigation into the explosive demolition of all three towers. Most people, most architects and engineers know nothing about the third high rise, the third worst structural failure in modern history, in fact, that collapsed in 9/11, World Trade Center Building 7. So when people learn about this, they're just generally shocked about how they could not know about a 47-story skyscraper that collapses straight down, uniformly, symmetrically, into its own footprint at free fall acceleration, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of the building. This is absolutely extraordinary. I'm looking forward to sharing it with your listeners today.
Absolutely. And we're going to certainly get into all of those details. Now, I thought we might start. A lot of our listeners will be very familiar with the territory we're going to cover today, but it has been a while since we've covered this topic on the show, and I thought I'd like to ask you to kind of give us a bit of your background and how it was you have come to be, as you are now, a proponent of truth and justice, someone who's basically dedicated his life to this cause. Could you run us through the key moments that led you to creating Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth?
Well, it's a little embarrassing to reveal where I came from, because I was what you might call a Reagan Republican in 2006. I had been rooting for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. I was rooting for Colin Powell as he was making his case to get those you-know-whats out there who had, looking for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq,
yeah,
looking for the to Saddam Hussein for his ties to Osama bin Laden, all of which, of course, are shown to everybody by now to be lies, which I swallowed hook, line, and sinker until 2006 in March, when on the way back from a construction observation meeting, I listened to the radio show Guns and Butter with Bonnie Faulkner on KPFA Free Speech Radio in Berkeley. And I was just shocked to be hearing David Ray Griffin, an author of now 10 books on the subject of 9/11, who was discussing the latest evidence that had just come out in August of 2005 that we didn't know anything about because it hadn't been revealed by the city. But here we learn that 500 firefighters commissioned by the fire commissioner, Thomas von Essen, to record their experiences of what was going on in 9/11 for them. Of the 500, turns out that 118 of them were talking about hearing and sounds of explosions being blown around in the buildings at many different levels of these buildings prior to the demolition of these buildings, or the collapse, as the official story goes. And this is extraordinary. They're seeing flashes of light, many of them, before at the onset of destruction of the buildings. And so this was really incredible. And he went on and on talking about the evidence for the explosive demolition. And I'm just shocked I can't even believe this. So I had to find out if this were true. So I went to hear David Ray Griffin the next night in Oakland, and it was sold out. There were 600 people already there. I was late, and I got turned away. So that was the beginning of my search for the truth there.
Extraordinary, the response, the numbers of people who've turned up to many of these events and lectures, so huge, and yet still the 9/11 truth movement is apparently a very fringe movement which has very little traction in American society. What's going on there, do you think?
Well, it turns out that it's growing. Back in 2007 and 8, after I started by showing the evidence to 15 of the architects that I had worked with, bought them pizza, made them watch this slideshow, showed them, documented that the buildings that were clearly controlled demolitions. They ended up signing my petition, all but one of them, who was Middle Eastern. So while he agreed with us, he couldn't sign the petition. That's how it's gone. Everybody who ends up looking at this evidence ends up agreeing with us that we need a real investigation, that these definitely look like controlled demolitions. So people were more active back then, but now we don't have as many people as active because it's 13 years after the events, but we have a lot more people that are actually aware of the events. We're out in the streets. We're handing out literature. We're gauging with the kind of the percentage of people that are aware in any different city or country, and it's about more than half of the people now are aware that there's an issue, and half of those are already in agreement that there's a serious questions that call for a real investigation. And very few people are getting irate with us. It's rare, quite rare, actually, these days.
That's a really strong indication, isn't it? And it appears that what's happening is that a silent majority is already present who know that they've been fooled, or haven't been fooled, but they've been lied to. And they're not talking about it very much because people don't feel that they're able to speak out without repercussions. And I certainly know that from, you know, having worked in professional environments, and anyone who's earning a living and paying a mortgage these days cannot easily afford to espouse very, very radical viewpoints that diverge from the mainstream status quo. Is that something you've had to deal with yourself?
Well, in my case, for the last 4 years, I've been able to devote 100% of my time to educating the public and the profession and elected representatives, media representatives.
Richard, we're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we are going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and my guest today is Richard Gage, AIA, founding member of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And we were just talking there before the break about the difficulty in speaking out, and the difficulty in speaking out is not just restricted to those who become full-time activists, but what I've found is people have difficulty speaking out even informally about their views because of peer group pressure, just because of the general sense that it would be inappropriate to express such views. Of course, this is very dangerous, and this type of enforced conformity is a hallmark of a repressive society's throughout history. But I was just asking you there before the break, Richard, you know, what that impact had been on you and on people you know.
Yes, personally, I have not felt intimidated from speaking out. In fact, no one has called me from the profession or from the police or intelligence or anything to cause any degree of intimidation. But I do know that probably twice the number of people who have actually signed our petition have avoided signing it because of the potential ramifications to their job. We've had a number of people actually call us who have signed it that asked us to remove their signature because a potential employer or a boss found, when they searched them, their affiliation with us.
Indeed.
So that is a factor, a significant factor for us. So we could have 4,000 petition signers perhaps without that. But that's a reality. People value their jobs. They've got to provide for their families.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it is particularly in the engineering community, there's a lot of defense contractors that have engineers, that some of which have signed our petition and taken consequences that we've heard about. So it's a reality.
And you don't get a lot of people arguing against your views in a systematic way. From what I can see, that there isn't much of a debate going on, which is certainly an indication that that your observations, your analysis, and the papers that you've written can't be seriously challenged.
Well, they can be and have been. We don't consider it a serious challenge. People will dispute what we're saying, but it's pretty irrefutable. We have debated physicists at Free Speech Radio throughout the free speech system, and most suggest that we've done so well as to shame them, particularly Dave Thomas, a physicist from New Mexico Tech Institute, Richard Muller, a physicist from UC Berkeley, who have defense contract work that they have largely engaged in during their careers, and who had to resort to what we would call blatant lies about trying to defend, for instance, the free fall acceleration of a 40,000 ton structural steel system in World Trade Center 7.
Yeah.
And how it came down so fast against, you know, these things are 3 to 5 times stronger than they need to be. And of course, we're talking about Building 7, the 47 story skyscraper that collapses in the afternoon at 5:20 on 9/11, straight down uniformly, symmetrically, under 7 seconds into its own footprint in the perfect manner of a classic controlled demolition. So we provide the evidence not only in the behavior of the building, but in the witnesses of explosions, the evidence of molten iron found in the rubble pile of this building is produced by thermite, an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter, which evidence is documented thoroughly by FEMA in their May 2002 report in Appendix C. So we've got evidence provided not only by us, the 2,100 architects and engineers and hundreds of scientists who have looked for this evidence and found it, but by officials from the U.S. Geological Survey, who find in the World Trade Center dust samples tons and tons of tiny iron microspheres, which are the byproduct of thermite. This is shown to be the byproduct of thermite by its chemical signature. So, yes, we have the evidence, and yes, it is irrefutable. But yes, it is disputed, and we do very well in debates. But we can't find anybody from NIST representing the official story, from engineers or architects. It's very, very difficult to get them to show up.
Indeed. And your organization has done a lot of work reaching out to these organizations. And it's very admirable the way you've persistently followed protocols, and you are attempting to go through the front door, as I would say, to basically use the checks and balances within the government, within the regulatory bodies, to bring NIST to account. And I would like to talk a little bit about that in this show, because you've got an ongoing case that is being led by Dr. William Pepper, which I think is one of the most promising things I've seen in a long time in terms of breaking through the wall of denial and propaganda. Because what Dr. Pepper has highlighted, and I'm sure you can expand on this, but is that NIST's own building plans for Building 7 appear to be inaccurate, or the ones that they used in their analysis of the collapse of Building 7.
Yes, indeed. The input data that NIST uses to try to prove their initiation of collapse theory in World Trade Center 7 is and fraudulent. There's no other word for it. Briefly, their theory is built around thermal expansion due to fires that expand long span 50-foot beam, which pushes a girder, therefore, off of its seat on column 79, which causes a succession of 9 floors, thus the column ultimately failing in buckling mode, and then gutting the inside of the building, and then the outside of the building, then they say comes down at in 7 seconds, which the outside of the building does come down in 7 seconds.
Yeah.
But after this whole chain of events, they say, is the official story. Well, this can't be true for a whole variety of reasons. One, the fires that NIST says started the collapse were shown and proven by photographs and videos to be out, burned out, before the, well, in fact, an hour before the collapse began. So they could not have been providing the thermal expansion that NIST depends on for this whole scenario. But let's say that was true.
Yeah.
And that happened. The beams could not have expanded anyway. They're fireproofed, and they're tied to the concrete slab above them with what we call shear studs in the building industry.
Yes.
So that couldn't have happened. But let's say that did happen and these beams expanded and pushed this girder. Well, the girder also had shear studs tying it into the concrete slab above. It could not have been pushed. But NIST says those shear studs must have been missing from the construction, even though they're shown to be a part of the construction. So even if that were, though, to not have been the case, and the girder did slide sideways, breaking the bolts on its connection, they lied about the width of the seat it was sitting on and the amount of thermal expansion capable of the capacity of length that those beams had to push this girder off of its seat.
Yes.
So that couldn't have happened. In other words, the long span beams would have sagged before they could have pushed the girder off.
Absolutely, and we'll get right back into that after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My guest today is Richard Gage, AIA, and we're talking about the collapse of Buildings 1, 2 and 7. Very, very important topic, and one which I know our listeners will be greatly interested in. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Richard Gage about the collapse of the World Trade Center. Richard, we were just talking there before the break about all the misinformation that's come from NIST regarding Building 7 and getting into the actual structural elements and the blueprints that NIST used, which have been shown to be incorrect. And I'd like you to perhaps tell us more about the case that is now being followed, pursued by Dr. William Pepper, attorney, to force NIST to correct their faulty information.
Yes, indeed. We did have the Office of the Inspector General being contacted by attorney Bill Pepper because they oversee NIST. That's their job, is to oversee them. So we pointed out that that NIST omitted showing on their computer input models these stiffeners at the end of this girder, which would have reinforced the flanges such that they wouldn't have folded, which is a requirement in this collapse scenario. It would have never happened for that reason alone. So we unfortunately had the Office of the Inspector General simply forward the inquiry to NIST to be answered by NIST on their own recognizance. This is like putting the wolves in charge of the sheep.
Yes.
It's not the oversight accountability that we were looking for, that NIST, that the OIG is responsible for. And indeed, we get a letter back from NIST saying, our calculations are fine. Thank you very much. We're not going to be changing them. So we're at a point where we can decide now to actually sue the Office of the Inspector General for nonconformance of their responsibilities. However, that lawsuit would need to be taken up in Washington, D.C. And since then, we have had another opportunity handed to us on a silver platter, that being the coverage by CNN of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth in our efforts to draw attention to the museum, the National 9/11 Museum, which just opened last Wednesday, and we were there handing out our alternative brochure guide to the museum. In it, we have everything that you will not find in the museum, including the evidence of molten metal, seen by World Trade Center structural engineer Leslie Robertson, other firefighters, other iron workers, other structural engineers, as well as the evidence for nanothermite and all the World Trade Center dust, which is found by a small team of scientists independently analyzing the results of four independently collected samples from all different areas of World Trade Center Ground Zero. All of this is in this brochure. We were handing out the brochure. CNN covered the issue. They say this organization, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, is spreading lies. Now, that's defamatory. And so our attorney, William Pepper, is now engaging in a serious effort to advise us as to the opportunity to sue them for libel, basically slander.
Yes,
because they said it and they wrote it. So we have a very, very good case, according to Dr. Pepper. So it's and we can file this case actually in any jurisdiction just about that we want, because we're represented by our petition signers all over the world in many, many states. So he thinks that will be a lot better opportunity for us. So we're writing right now, first CNN, a demand of a retraction, and we'll see how that goes. And we'll probably be following up. So it's a better opportunity than filing a federal lawsuit in Washington, D.C., which courts have been shown to be substantially corrupt.
Indeed. And, of course, it's going to cost a lot of money to file a lawsuit. And you may win it, you may not. It's definitely sounds like a great thing to do, but I can understand it would be very, very big commitment to get involved in it. I think, to me, what's important is that the groundwork has been done and the information is now there for everyone to see. And I think it's this question of this continuing groundswell of people who do start to take a look at the information. Eventually, a tipping point has to come. That's the way I see it. Of course, history, the geopolitical situation will have a lot of effect on that, what the outcomes are for the United States over the next 10, 20 years. Obviously are going to have a big part to play in all of that, because we are in a very tense situation geopolitically around the world now with the rise of China and US power somewhat being challenged. Richard, I'd like to touch on a few more slightly tangential subjects in this interview. One which I feel forced to do because I get a lot of people, and this is really unfortunate, and I just think it needs to be addressed. I get a lot of people telling me and have been telling me over the years that the official 9/11 truth movement is somewhat infiltrated, that it is like a controlled opposition, and that they've been only cherry-picking certain types of evidence and they've been ignoring all of the other theories that have so much value in them, and that this is done deliberately to steer people away from the truth. And unfortunately, you know, I've had this from people who I would otherwise consider as being friends. They're people who are not deliberately being attempting to cause trouble, but it seems that maybe this is a tendency that happens in any type of political movement, is that we have this tendency of people to split apart and to become suspicious of each other. And I hold up your organization as a great example of an approach to the problem that does not engage in any of that type of activity, which is very, very important to start off with. You don't engage in any kind of name-calling. And secondly, you don't engage in any speculation beyond what you can prove, which means that what you actually have to say on your website and in your lectures is actually quite limited. But see, some people feel frustrated by that because they want to know the bigger picture. They want to know the full conspiratorial picture. But you don't give that to them because you say, well, no, I'm here to present this forensic evidence. But this in turn actually makes some people question your legitimacy. Can you just briefly address that?
Well, we are architects and engineers. We do have credibility with respect to buildings and science and forensic evidence. And we do look at the eyewitness testimony and the video documentation of what happened on 9/11. And we do have opinions based on our experience, degrees in architecture and engineering, 2,100 of us. And we draw on the experience of other scientists, controlled demolitions experts, and other technical and building professionals. So the moment we start speculating as to who may have been responsible for perpetrating the explosive controlled demolitions of these buildings, we are outside our area of technical credibility, and we lose credibility. And we hand skeptics and people who might even be conceived of as enemies, those who are obviously out to protect the perpetrators of 9/11 in the mainstream media, in government circles. We hand to them on a silver platter when we start speculating, because then they start accusing us of having a political agenda, which we don't have. So I don't buy into the premise that just because we don't speculate means that we're somehow suspect ourselves.
Great, thanks for that. We are going to break. with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back for one more segment with Richard Gage, AIA, talking about 9/11 and the destruction of the World Trade Center. Don't go away. Back here with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Richard Gage, AIA, about 9/11 and the destruction of the Twin Towers. And we've been talking there a little about some of the dissent, you might say, from those within the 9/11 research community, which I wanted to address also partly, Richard, because I know Jesse Ventura has done a number of TV shows recently with the renowned, some may say the infamous, Judy Wood. And this is somewhat problematic. I've actually had Jesse on my show. He came on my show for a full hour a couple of months ago. And I have to say I like the man, and I believe he comes from a good place in his heart. I do have a lot of concerns about some of the information that he puts forward, and particularly some of the information there that comes from Judy Wood. And I know you've already spoken about this in the past, but would you be able to just briefly address your position on the directed energy weapons theories that Dr. Wood proposes?
Sure. One of the criteria that I use to evaluate somebody's intention is to look at how they address the scientific forensic evidence that we provide, which, as you suggested earlier, is disputable but not refutable, because it is extremely solid. And when I refer to this evidence, let me, since we haven't had time to go into it in detail on this particular interview, let me refer people to first our website, which is ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org. And to our DVD, which is available on the website in our store, which is 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, in which we have 43 technical experts in their fields, high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolitions experts, fire protection engineers, all laying out the evidence that that we're talking about here. So you can find out what that is. And in that evidence, there's a lot of support for explosions occurring in all three high-rises before and during their collapses. There's evidence for extreme hot molten iron seen by first responders, documented in videos, cameras, pouring out of the South Tower, in fact, 10 minutes prior to its collapse, documented as molten iron. And there's evidence for nanothermite, extremely sophisticated material made only in the most advanced defense contracting laboratories. And this is found in throughout the World Trade Center dust and documented in a 25-page peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. It stands uncontested. There's no other peer-reviewed paper contesting it at all in the last 4 years. So with that kind of support for scientific forensic evidence, when somebody like Dr. Judy Wood comes along and in page 120 through 126 in her book that Jesse Ventura touts as being scientific, she denies the evidence, the very basic evidence that I just highlighted and that we provide documentation for. So I can't support. In fact, somebody who denies the basic evidence that is irrefutable, especially when the theory that she comes up with to try to explain the phenomena that she's looking at doesn't even have evidence to support it. So I have to suspect somebody's intentions who denies the best evidence and has no evidence to support her own theory, which includes, by the way, what she calls dustification of the steel, structural steel sections, which she says weren't found at the bottom, at the base. And indeed, they're not. They're blown laterally at 60 miles an hour during the destruction of these twin towers, landing 600 feet away. So the steel is distributed around actually a 1,400-foot diameter around each of the twin towers. It's not missing. It's not turned to dust. Yes, there's a lot of dust, but the dust comes from 90,000 tons of concrete, which has been pulverized to a fine powder in midair before it ever reaches the ground. These concrete floors, which are, by the way, are not stacked up at all on the ground, which is something else that she's looking at, all this dustification. Well, yes, concrete is turned to dust. Gypsum powder is turned to dust. In fact, office furniture and carpeting and glass, all of this is turned to dust through an incredible series of high-energy explosives, which are seen blowing out floor by floor all the way down each of the twin towers symmetrically at a rate of almost freefall. So this is not some high-energy weapon turning these materials to dust. The explosiveness both of these towers is quite well seen in the videos, which officials show us to support their theory, which is ludicrous, of progressive collapse due to the impacts of the jet planes and the jet fuel started fires. So that's what we think about the DEW, or directed energy weapons theory, which is documented in a 4-page paper on our website, ae911truth.org.
Excellent. And I have to say, I hope that that Jesse Ventura gets you on at some point to provide a bit of balance in his own presentations. I do have fingers crossed for that, because I know his show is quite big. And I have to say, I've watched a number of presentations of Dr. Wood, and I've seen that she is actually not interested in forensic or what we call empirical evidence. She's actually said she's not interested in it. So that, to me, has said, well, okay, well, that's not really a very credible line of research then, if you're not interested in empirical evidence. Look, we've got a few minutes left. Richard, could we just have a look at what materials there are available now? I've just been having a look at your site, and it's been a while since I visited. I've noticed there's a new film that you're advertising on the website. It's called The New Pearl Harbor. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, Italian filmmaker Massimo Mazzucco has created a response to the debunking arguments that have been made against the 9/11 truth community in several different areas of the events of 9/11, including the World Trade Center towers, all three of them. And this ends up being a 5-hour multi-DVD set.
Wow.
I think there's 3 DVDs in there. And two of the sections, 6 and 7, refer specifically to World Trade Center 7 and the Twin Towers. And we have actually taken those sections out and uploaded them to our YouTube channel. Our YouTube channel is called AE911 Truth. And he's done an excellent job interviewing our experts, our petition signers
yeah.
at AE911 Truth, and in direct response, point by point, to the points that the debunkers make to make their points, and he just levels them. It's an extraordinary work. It's called 9/11, September 11th, New Pearl Harbor.
Excellent. I'll definitely be checking that out, and I'm sure anyone listening today will be interested in that. Now, of course, Richard, we met in Sydney back in 2009, and we did a great little interview with you down at the Opera House with another very famous architect, Jan Utzon. I'm just curious to know if you'd had any further communications or working relationship with Jan Utzon, the son of the great Jorn Utzon, who is actually a signatory to your petition.
Well, yes, Jan is a signatory. His father, Jorn, who designed the Sydney Opera House, of course, passed away well before 9/11.
Yes.
We have interviewed him, and that he was scheduled to appear in 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts Speak Out, but it just didn't work into the final edit. I haven't connected with him in a couple of years. I hope he's well.
Well, it's certainly when he spoke out on this topic, the YouTube, and you can still find that YouTube, by the way, if you Google it, Google Jan Utzon, Google 9/11, it will come up, or put that into YouTube. When we released that YouTube video, the press in Sydney jumped onto it. In fact, they republished the video without our permission, without your permission, because it actually had a 9/11 Truth copyright on it. It's just amazing how quickly they jumped on it, turned it into like a front page story in the Sydney Morning Herald to try and debunk it. But that just shows you when someone of prominence steps forward, it has a huge effect.
Indeed. We're delighted to have the kind of support that we get from high-level architects and engineers and others, firefighters, for instance, like Jan Utzon and the firefighters that we have support from, like Rudy Dent, a fire marshal who was active duty on 9/11. We have a lot of very good support, including the family members, about a dozen of them, who are calling for a real investigation.
Great. And it's been a great, great pleasure talking to you, Richard, and I do hope to have you on the show more often in future. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Hereward.
And that's Truth News Radio Australia signing out for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then.